Welcome back to the Pet Hour presented by IAMS. I'm your host, Nancy Glass, along with my co-host, Cindy Connors.
Nancy, you've seen service dogs, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's a book about a dog who was a personal pet but became an assistance dog when its owner became disabled.
Well, Let Buster Lead, that's the book we're talking about, is really fantastic. It's a personal memoir about love, courage, and healing. Deborah Dozier Potter shares her relationship with her border collie Buster from the day she met him at the animal shelter until the last moment of his life. Let me just give you a little bit of background about the author. Deborah Dozier Potter was born into an A-list family. Her mother, Joan Fontaine, her aunt, Olivia de Havilland, her stepmother, Anne Rutherford, were 1940s-era movie stars, and her dad, William Dozier, a popular film and television executive, produced and narrated TV's Batman series. Once again, the book is Let Buster Leave, and it's a wonderful, wonderful book. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you.
Hi, Deborah. I cried all Sunday.
Oh. Well, I hope you laughed, too.
I did.
Good.
But she said to me, I just cried and cried and cried.
Oh, God.
It was a good cry.
It's a great cry because you want Buster to live forever, because he has made your life so rich.
Well, and that's why I wrote the book, frankly, because I wanted him to live forever. He was such a wonderful dog. I mean, you know, we all have wonderful dogs. This book is dedicated to all of us out there who've had that one pet who was the greatest pet who ever lived, who was the love of our life. I've dedicated the book to people like us. It's perfectly okay to fall in love with our pets. People think we're crazy. We need this kind of unconditional love.
Well, tell us about the trauma that you went through and how Buster helped you through it, because I think that's one of the most remarkable parts of the book.
He was with me when I was riding my horse. I fell off and broke 5 bones. I had a concussion. I was unconscious, lying on the ground. What people told me later, Buster lay down on top of me and wouldn't let the rescue workers near me.
Wow.
And they had to send for somebody he knew who to say, it's okay, Buster, these people are going to help her. That was that first moment right there. And then I was in the hospital for a week. I did have major trauma. And then when I started being able to get out and go to stores and things, here I had a walker and a sling and a neck brace. And Buster, you know, somehow would never tug at the leash. He'd put his paws up on my shoulders to calm me down.
How did you know you were having post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, it was about a year later. I was getting really snippy. You know, and the bones had healed by then. I mean, I was in no physical pain, but I would still flinch and, you know, just cringe when my husband would walk in the room and try to touch me. And what I didn't realize was that I was that way with everybody because I wasn't going out. Every single given day, I had talked myself out of going out of the house. People think that you have to be blind to have an assistance dog. That is not true. Assistance dogs help people with all kinds of things. Depression and diabetes and epilepsy and seizures. And then I got to post-traumatic stress disorder and my jaw dropped. There were the symptoms. That was me. I couldn't believe it. I didn't realize that what I was going through was a disease that is treatable. Buster then became my official service dog. He wore his jacket. He had his ID card. He went with me any place that my husband didn't go. We would go to, you know, Walmart, Kmart. What if I had a business meeting, he would, I don't think I could have walked from the car to the meeting.
How exactly did the dog make a difference? As a service dog, how did he make a difference?
I mean, one time I was in a grocery store. I mean, Buster was right next to me. And some guy starts coming, approaches me, you know. And Buster was able to just put himself between people and me. He would just subtly put his body between people and me and look me in the eye and just essentially say, I'm here. It's okay. They're not going to touch you.
And that's what you needed to get through this?
I needed it to feel safe. You know, people with canes don't always have to use their cane, but they're really glad it's there. And I was able to finish my grocery shopping.
Did people treat you differently?
Having Buster next to me with his uniform and this and that, I think did signal to people, this woman is different and it's okay for her to be different and give her some space. A friend of mine just asked me, she said, didn't you feel embarrassed writing about your personal life like that in the book? If anything got me to accept myself as I am, besides the love of my wonderful pet, going out in public and letting go of that and saying to myself, so you're different. So what? We're all different. My friends are either going to accept me the way I am or they're not. and I need to accept myself the way I am. And that's why part of the title is self-acceptance, because not just Buster, but going through life with a disability really taught me to accept myself.
And it was that unconditional love from Buster that really showed you the way, isn't it?
It did. And he led me into that acceptance. He led me back into life. He led me to accept and appreciate myself for what I have and my talents for what I have, and to move forward. Go on. Trust life. It's going to be okay.
But so if Buster helped you get out of the house and helped you cope, how did you wean yourself off the need for Buster to be with you at all times?
Oh, boy. That was just pure determination. This disease was such a trap. It was such a prison. And I write about how the Riverwalk has so many people walking, but I had to walk on the edge of the river and keep my husband on the other side of me, you know, and just hope I didn't fall in the river.
How long was your recovery?
Oh, about 2 years. And when Buster was diagnosed with a cancerous tumor, I knew I had to hurry up and get well. I had to get well, but while I still had him, I also had to keep taking him with me, even though he couldn't walk very far, because he needed his job to keep him alive. So there was this switch where he was taking care of me, and then suddenly I was taking care of him. I was trying to keep him alive. So there was that moment where we were both doing this for each other. It was more than a moment. It was about 2 months there.
How often is it that a pet can become a service dog? Don't you normally have to acquire a dog that is specifically trained for this type of job?
I'm really glad you asked that question. One of the links to my website is workinglikedogs.com. Yes, people can train their pets to be a service dog. I'm going to use the word assistance dog because it's such a broad category. There's so many different kinds of dogs. A service dog under the category assistance dog is one that performs specific tasks. But there are so many people who need very specific tasks. I have a friend in a wheelchair who needs her dog to open doors for her. He needs her dog to fetch groceries for her in the grocery store. There are people who need dogs to answer telephones and press elevator buttons. Those are highly trained dogs. And there are wonderful organizations that you can lead to through my website that do help provide people with the training they need their dog to do if they're all absolutely different. And what people don't realize is the law does allow us to train our own pet, because not everyone can afford a trained service dog. But my needs were very simple compared to the needs of people who have a physical disability and need a service pet dog for that, or people who are blind and need a guide dog, people who are hearing impaired and need a hearing dog. Those dogs are very highly trained, and they're fascinating to watch. And thank God for the ADA law that allows people to have the assistance of an animal in public. I am one of the people here today to say if it wasn't for that law, I think I would still be a recluse today.
Do you think Buster knew that you were well enough and he finally passed on?
I do. I think he waited for me. I think I'm going to start crying now. I think he waited until I knew I was well, because I write about this in this book. I went into Kmart to do a simple errand, and I left him in the car because he couldn't walk that far anymore. He couldn't walk from the car into the store. And I came out, and I realized, oh, my God, it's 3 days before Christmas, and I just went to Kmart and bought something, and I was okay. Nothing bothered me. I didn't go have a panic attack. Adrenaline didn't run through my system for 2 hours. I said to myself, wow, I must be getting well.
So how are you doing without Buster now?
Oh, I'm doing okay, because I knew I was well. I did get past the disability part of this illness. I think it's really important for people to realize that we can all train our dogs to help us in life. But when our illness becomes a disability, that's when the law allows us to take our animals in public. I am now back to just being wary in public, but not nearly what I was before. I still have Gracie and Reggie, my other two dogs, and I would not press one of them into service because I really don't come under the requirement of disability anymore. I know that myself. And my husband and I are, you know, just, he was so wonderful through this whole thing. Now, there's another love story in this book.
Yeah, he sounds like a terrific guy.
That sounds lovely. Deborah Dozier Potter, it is, I think it's very hard for people, especially somebody who is already successful and very visible, to admit such a vulnerability. And I think it's inspirational to hear how your dog really helped you get through this. It's inspirational for all of us. Once again, the book is Let Buster Lead. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah. It was a great book. You know, Nan, she's really brave to share such a personal story.
I agree. Really something. Well, we are going to switch to a much lighter note now, Cindy. We are going to talk about throwing a party for your dog. Whether you're celebrating graduation from puppy kindergarten, a clean bill of health from the vet, or your pet's first birthday, there are plenty of great reasons to throw a dog party. Potty. Get it? Paw-ty. That's what it's called by Barbara Berg. She is a chef who's written the Good Treats Cookbook for Dogs. 50 home-cooked treats for special occasions, plus everything you need to know to throw a dog party. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Barbara, are people actually having parties with their dogs?
Every day. I'm sure right now someone somewhere is celebrating whatever. We ship cakes out on a daily basis. We have people that come by our canine cafe here in Charlotte.
Wait a second. You're a canine caterer.
Uh-huh. We cater exclusively to the canines, and people come in every day, all day, and get special treats for their dog, special cakes, doggy daiquiris, a couple of old drools, and they're set to go.
What's in a doggy daiquiri?
The doggy daiquiri is our take on an ice cream. For dogs, we use low-fat plain yogurt, a little pureed pumpkin, and you can add any fruit that your dogs like. But we find a lot of dogs like pumpkin.
Well, that means we could actually eat that, right?
Yes, you can eat any of the recipes that are in the cookbook, because what we do is we're basically baking and using people ingredients, but we omit the sugar, the salt, and any of the flavor enhancers that dogs just aren't interested in.
But I might skip the beef cookies. That's just me.
Oh, I don't know. They really do taste good with a deep Merlot.
Now, Barbara, do you think that you have inspired people to have dog parties? Or, I mean, I got to say, looking at your book, I thought that really could be fun. It's not something I would have ever thought about, inviting like 10 dogs to my house and having a party.
Well, we have even some of our local doggy daycares. They come by on a regular basis when they have a client that is having a birthday, and they'll pick up a cake and take it back. And all the dogs that happen to be there on that day get to take part in a celebration.
That is hilarious.
How fun is that?
So can you share an easy recipe with us?
Absolutely. Let's say you've got some salmon in the pantry, and you've got a little egg. You might want to shred a carrot, maybe add a little parsley to freshen the doggy's breath. You may have some spinach, and you just mix that all together with a little yogurt, a little flour to keep it together, and wow. That is it. You just bake it for about 20 minutes. And
I got to say, that makes me feel hungry.
Oh, you're going to have those tails a-wagging.
What's the funniest dog party you've catered?
Oh, my. We had a party, and there were about 8 labs, and they were all dressed up. And when they came in, all of them had their costumes on. This was a little Hawaiian luau party. But by the end of the party, it was hysterical. The coconut bra was over here. The lace skirt was over here. They slowly just started undressing.
I hope they were neutered.
That was funny. And we had the little cookie treats that we used. We cut them out in shapes of palm trees and sailboat. The cake was the shape of a palm tree. So you really can have a lot of fun with these parties and how you cater one.
How many dogs do you have?
I have one right now.
Oh.
I have one that I've had now for 9 years. I found Hoover running along the freeway and decided that that wasn't so good. And he got in the car and realized, wait a minute, you're a caterer. Oh, I like this. Been with me ever since.
Well, what made you decide to cater for dogs or to dogs rather than people?
Well, I did cater for people, to people. And I was blessed for years, actually 14 years and 10 months, with TJ. He was a Golden Retriever Australian Shepherd mix, and quite the smart one, I may add. And I was talking with my veterinarian, and my veterinarian just said, you know what? You might try this treat. I just happened to see one that I thought would be fun, and I said, I would really like to bake for TJ. So I let her look at the ingredients. She said, go for it. And now I've been going for it for about 13 years now.
How's business?
Business is great. We are certainly barking up the right tree, so to speak.
What are you thinking of going into the doggy cater? How's business?
Hey, if this doesn't pay off.
How's it going?
I can make a mean tart.
Yes, you can. And I'm just going to leave that where it is. Now, you hear about this a lot, but when you first started this, people must have thought, okay, this is just a little wacky.
You have to realize 13 years ago, we had a lot of dogs that would come visit us at the Canine Cafe and catering. During this whole time, I've actually watched this kind of evolution take place where now we're catering and they've got their clothes. It's no longer collars. It's neckwear. They have little pearls, little booties. In fact, just a while ago, I did a little pajama series. We're having a pajama party for dogs that we're catering. And they're coming over to look at all the pajama and footwear that we have.
Now, at your Canine Cafe, do you have tables that the dogs and the owners come in and sit down?
Yes, we do. We have an area where the dogs can come during yappy hour, and that's when we serve complimentary cake treats and our doggy daiquiris. And it's just a marvelous opportunity for them to sniff, socialize, be dogs, and have a treat, which often does encourage wonderful behavior. And if there is a snippy moment, our Doggylicious Party Lounge can double as a timeout lounge.
I don't mean to be presumptuous here, but I'm not sure dogs know when they're in timeout.
Yes, they do.
They do?
They sit there and you can see them sulking. What? What? I do this at home. And it's where the owner just goes in the lounge and, okay, buddy. And then, voila, it's back to the festivities.
I'll tell you, I would love to be able to take my doggy to a restaurant. I mean, if I could eat and then have my dog with me, that would be so much fun.
When we have the doggy parties, we do the catering for the dog. We assign a server that basically helps move the party along, like during meet and greet as the dogs come to the party.
Do you have any tips for someone who might want to have a dog party?
Right at the beginning, you want to know who is party savvy, who is very well socialized, and if there are any questions, you might meet your friend with their dog in a dog park or at a store where they're welcome, and just see how they are with the other dogs.
And I would imagine it's probably important that you have a pretty large fenced-in yard.
You definitely need a fenced-in yard. I also recommend a designated area for any doggy relief. Party poop bags is what we call them, where you can make it even festive by writing the dog's name on the bag.
I usually like to leave a party with something a little nicer than
that. Well, no, you're not getting that. No, you leave that at the party. But we consider every dog is a winner. And we really believe in party favor bags where they can go back home and have a sampling of whatever they enjoyed at the party.
Well, Barbara, it is a great book, and it sounds like a lot of fun to have a party for your dog. Thank
it
you for really joining
is.
Us.
Oh, it is my pleasure. And sometimes you really don't know who's having more fun, the canine kids or us.
I think that it's us, probably. And once again, the book is called The Good Treats Cookbook for Dogs. Thanks so much, Barbara.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you. My pleasure. And bon appetit, ladies.
Up next on the Pet Hour, presented by IAMS, it's time to ask the expert. Animal behaviorist Steve Dale answers your questions. And remember, if you have a question or comment, log on to our website at thepethour.com. We always love to hear from you. I'm Nancy Glass. Cindy Connors and I will be right back.